Hello and welcome to the Intentional Manifestation Podcast, where we talk about all of the things that help us to manifest an aligned life that's beyond our wildest dream. My name is Megan, and I'm your host for this podcast. I use neuroscience, epigenetics, somatics, energetics, and holistic nutrition to help my clients completely shift their perspective so they can transform their life. To align your life with your dreams, check out my self-paced coaching program that also gives one-on-one coaching support. For just $47 per month, cancel anytime. You can find the link in the description.
We can go ahead and get started, and I would love to just hear about you. Like, how did you get into being a money coach? How did you get into property investment? And just tell me about yourself.
Okay. So, yeah. So, I had a corporate career. So, I worked for an American corporate internationally. So, at one point, I was managing 96 countries for them, which was amazing, but at a certain point, exhausting. And long story short, I got really ill. So I found myself in Harley Street, which is a sort of a medical street in London, on an MRI scanner, having my brain and my spine scanned, with them thinking I had MS, and I was 35. So that was a little bit of a wake up call of like, hey, this world isn't working. From that, I was like, okay, how do I navigate that? Because I was, you know, earning a good income, but I also had mortgage on a flat in London, and I was single, and I was like, there's nobody to pay the bills if I don't. But I heard a rumor that there was going to be a restructure, which wasn't something that was common in those days in this particular company. But I heard that there could be one. I was like, okay, maybe this is my opportunity to sort of sit tight for a second. And so I did. And that's what happened. I got offered three positions to go back into Europe and do those for them, or I could take an exit, and I chose to take the exit. So I had a little bit of cash, but that was really enough to sort of pay the bills and tie me over. It wasn't enough to invest with. But I looked at what I was going to do next, and I knew I needed to just do something that was going to work more for my health. So I had always loved property. Like, me and my family would always, wherever we were in holiday, we would always go and look at estate agent windows, right, and go, what if? No intention of ever buying anything, never bought anything, but we always play that game, right? So that was my passion. That was something I always really loved about it. So when people said, what are you going to do? I'm like, oh, something to do with property. And I think they were like, yeah, sure, right, whatever. Again, I had to go to the lawyers to get rid of my non-compete clause in my contract. And as I was leaving there, I got on the tube, and there was a newspaper laying on the ground, and I opened it up, and it opened up, and like, how to make money from property? Oh, okay. And basically, it all like just rolled from that. It was literally, I made the decision, and kind of like the universe just opened up these opportunities in front of my eyes. And it was taking place at a hotel around the corner from where I worked, which I wouldn't have known had I not been ill, because I used to then, I'd had to find a different way to work. So I'd walk past this hotel, so I knew where it was. And my boss had said, go and speak to recruiters if you need to go and find a new job. And I told him I was seeing a recruiter, went to the seminar. This is back in 2012. So London had the Olympics in 2012. So I finished working June 15th, 2012. And then I took the summer to really enjoy the Olympics and the craziness of London in that summer, which is amazing, which is good decompression from working 10 years in that corporate. And as per se, not being well. And then, yeah, then dove into the training. And I guess the rest is kind of history. From taking the training, I then built my property portfolio from literally, as I say, so no job, no income, a little bit of money, but nothing to write home about, and chronic illness. But that has really then enabled me to have that stability of reoccurring income coming in, just whatever the situation my health is, which, you know, when you look at 34% of entrepreneurs don't have a secure income source if they got ill or decided to exit. It's, you know, that's the reassuring piece for me, that I have that in place. And from doing that, I was asked by the company that trained me to then come back and, you know, help their people, like, learn, you know, pay it forward, if you like, and help other people invest. But when I was doing that, I started doing calls, coaching calls, like, all over the world. So and wherever I spoke to people, they all had the similar things coming up. So whether they had money or they didn't have money, they all had a challenge with their relationship to money. It manifested in different ways, but it they still had that issue. And I was like, this is incredible. Like, and as I say, similar things were coming up. And I've always been quite good practically with money, but I didn't really know the inner, I didn't have the inner understanding behind all of this. So that's why I was like, right, this is something I really want to go and learn now. And I don't know if you know anything about human design, but I'm a 1-3. So my 1 is my like detective investigator, let me go find everything. And my 3 is obviously my trial and error of everything in life. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. So I then, yeah, wanted to go and find out more about that. So I trained as a certified money coach so that I could really understand that dynamic of why these things were still showing up, even if they had money. Because everyone, I think everyone assumes that money is the solution. It isn't. So that's, yeah, that's a little of my journey so far.
Yeah, I love that. It's like kismet, right? Like everything lined up for you perfectly. Like you were meant to do this and you allowed the universe to show you the way. And then you just took the steps that were being shown to you. Like that's as simple as it is. It doesn't have to be harder than that. It's like, this is what I am kind of interested in. And the universe was like, oh, here you go. Like you didn't have to pick up that newspaper. You could have just been like, ew, a newspaper on the ground. Like, I'm not touching that, right? Or just like you said, like if you didn't get sick, you wouldn't have went that way. And like, there's just so many things. Yes. Like it was all there for you. Yeah. And if you could have went in any direction and you just went in that direction because you listened to the signs. And I just love that.
Yeah, totally. And but what's also crazy is like, because like people would have, some people may look at that and go, you got ill and like, you know, and see all of the darkness, I guess, of that getting ill. And, you know, for me, I saw that as an opportunity. And, you know, it was even a conversation that came up yesterday was about like people when they're burnt out, don't invest in themselves. And I was like, I invested the biggest amount ever in me when I was burnt out. And they were like, oh, I couldn't have made a decision like that. And like, that's what I think sometimes people forget is like, they look at me now and go, oh, well, yeah, it's easy for her. But 2012, I was in a dark place, right? And it was, if somebody had said anything slightly positive to me, I would have put a negative spin on it. I was in such a bad state. If health and then obviously affected my mindset as well, right? But at the same point, despite being in that dark hole and not really knowing how to get out of it, I knew I had to keep moving. And I kind of, you know, it's always been my case of like, something's going to change. You've got to change it, right? You can't, nothing's going to change unless you change. And so I had the courage and there's somewhere the inner strength still within me to make those decisions and still move forward, you know, because if not, where would I be now?
Right. Exactly. You would have went in the other direction. And it was your choice. You could have changed or stayed the same, right? And you're like, no, I'm done with this. So it's like when you get, maybe when you're burned out, you like don't make decisions, but then you get to a point where you're so burned out that you're at that rock bottom and you're like, literally this has to change. Like I cannot keep living like this. Yeah. And so you have to make a decision. Like you don't have a choice to not make a decision because you know you don't want to be at rock bottom forever. Who does? Okay.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, people always say you're motivated by pain or pleasure, right? You know, for me, I was definitely at that point wanting to get away from the pain, right? And
right.
I was like, I got to do something, you know, and it was scary at the point of like, oh my God, am I going to lose everything I've worked so hard and nearly killed myself to get? But it was like, I'll regret if I don't try.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And so my husband has been diagnosed with PTSD. He's in the Navy and we bought our house because he had a Veterans Affairs claim from his PTSD. So we invested in property for us to live in, but obviously it was like a good choice to, instead of renting. But everything kind of worked out for us to buy this exact house too. Like it all lined up. It was like things where we talked to the bank and they were like, oh, we're only going to give you this much of a mortgage. And so when we found this house, we were like, okay, we can only offer this much. Like that's our max. And we said that this is our max. And they took it, they accepted the offer. And we had a little bit more money than that, but we didn't want to spend that much, right? Like at this point, that was like our max offer. And so we had said, whatever, they took the offer. I'm losing my track of my story here. So they took the offer. And after that, the bank came back to us and said, oh, you know, we're actually going to give you the mortgage that you originally wanted. just a little bit more, but it ended up giving us like an extra like $30,000 or $40,000 to stay in our savings account. And even just the way that like this house, we ended up getting it for like $100,000 less than what it was asking because it had sat for so long on the market. He wasn't taking care of the house. So just the fact that we could see past like the sticky floors we were walking on, so gross.
Nice.
They're literally sticky. It was so gross. It was painted like bright blue with like geometric purple shapes on it. Oh my gosh. It was. When we came back, I was like, yeah, so we're gonna paint on the first day, and he's like, oh, I have extra paint, it's all in the garage. And I was like, I think we're just gonna paint it white. And he looked at me like I was crazy to paint the walls white. Like he was like, oh, bless your heart.
At least we'll start with white and then we'll make a decision from there.
Yeah, like at least I'll be able to see what the house actually is without like the tinge of blue that you see with like the light. Oh my god, it was brutal. But
brilliant.
Yes, everything worked out like just so perfectly. And you could look at that too and be like, oh, okay, you know, my husband will be like, yeah, but I had like, you know, I'm going through the darkest days of my life and like somebody died, which is what gave him PTSD in the first place. And
yeah,
it's like he feels bad because he's like, not, I don't want to say profited, but like he's come out successfully because of somebody's death. But I'm like, you can't change the fact that that person was going to die on that ship. All you can do, like you were there also by chance because he wasn't even supposed to deploy. He was still on paternity leave. And we, as a joint decision, were like, oh, if you go back like 2 months early, you can do this deployment. Like it's a lot of tax-free money. So you can add some money in our bank account, pay off some debt. He wasn't supposed to be on there. So just like the whole, you know, like
folded in your own zone.
It was supposed to happen like that. Like that was going to happen. That was not your story anyways. That's that person's story and his journey. And you just happened to be on the same ship and it happened to break your mind. And so you got help for that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So,
but
yes.
It's interesting that he feels like he profited from that because it's kind of sometimes similar when people have inherited money.
Yeah.
It's almost sense of responsibility or burden or guilt for having inherited yes. money, right? And it's the same, it's kind of a similar kind of thing of, yeah, so it's, yeah, ALP habit is internally or externally referenced.
Yes, yes, exactly. So yeah, it's really interesting just the dynamic of how everything just like it does work yeah. out, comes all together.
As it's meant to.
Yeah. Exactly. But I would love for you, you talked about the pattern that you would see. You would start talking to people and they all had the same pattern, whether they had money or not. And I'd love to know like what patterns you recognized in people regardless of their situation.
Yeah. So a lot of people I say were focusing on needing the money, like making the money. And that's something that you see again in the online space, right? There's a lot of focus of like a need to make more money. So, you know, there's a lot of promotion of like, you know, I can help yes. you get it 6 figures, 7 figures, 8 figures. But you know, I remember speaking to one guy in Australia and he was like, I'm earning 1.2 million a year. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why have you got $3.26 in your bank account? You know? So it was like always the focus on like the top level of either income, revenue, you know, whatever that is. But there wasn't they then still were chasing the money, right? Because it, you know, doesn't, well, however much you make is not necessarily the metric you should be chasing, right? Because, you know, if we look at EBIT just as actual practical money, you know, it's making it and then it's holding it and then it's investing it. But even if you take that practical side out of it as well, it's like, how can you feel content, happy, fulfilled, prosperous, whatever the adjective you want to use, when you have nothing, when you're under a bridge? I think there was a lot, again, that external validation of like needing to see the things in the external to validate, to try and achieve that happiness, that fulfillment, that prosperity. And that's where I think as humans, we've kind of got it slightly mixed. And so then we're always in pursuit of the external to give us that. And typically, you know, the external shows up when actually the internal was in a good place, right?
Yeah, so it's like 100%.
And you can still be content, then the external will show up to yes. match that.
Yeah. And we're programmed to believe that just by society. And you know, all the things that we've been told in life and the churches. And, you know, if you want money, it's evil. And, yeah. But we're going to profit off of all your money. Some of the richest people in the world are like the Catholic Church. So, yeah. Right? Like,
apparently that was something back in the day as well when they were trying to bring people into Christianity, right? They were like, well, we can't really bring in the poor people. So we'll tell them that they're virtuous by being poor.
Yeah, which absolutely.
Join the Christian churches. So if you actually look at the history, it's quite fascinating as well of where that actually came from.
Yeah, and then we've all been programmed to believe that. And we pass on these traumas generationally. So we're just all living in these beliefs that somebody made up for their own gain. And even when you look at the public school education system.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like some person was powerful enough to make other people believe what they said. And they even say that about at least the American school system, is that it was made to make employees. And they're not made to make leaders, made to make employees.
To pay taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. It's a really interesting thing that none of this is true.
Yeah. And it's interesting because if you look at human design and then transferred into gene keys, my life's work is the city of truth. So a lot of things I'm like, well, what is that true?
Yes.
I'm always looking for the truth behind it, looking into the inquiry. So it goes from the shadow of doubt into the gift of inquiry into the city of truth. So I'm like, go through inquiring, is that actually true?
I love that. Yes.
It's that, that, as you say, when you get to the root of where some of these things are formed, you know, with the inner work I do with people, it's as you say, we're hardwired by the age of 8. So a lot of it is taken on, as you say, from others, usually our caregivers, whoever they may have been, with our parents or somebody else. And we're, taking them on as truths. And half the time they weren't even ours.
Right.
And for me, the interesting thing is it's not even just the language we've heard. Sometimes it's actually just what we've absorbed and we've sponged it up.
Mm-hmm.
I had a client who assumed all his life that his mom hadn't got money to feed herself when they were growing up. He always saw his mom giving him and his brother food, but she never ate. So he always had it that there wasn't enough money for mom to have dinner. Turns out 40 years later, mom just ate a bit later.
Crazy, isn't it?
But his story was that they didn't have enough money, that his mom didn't eat dinner.
Oh, it gave me chills.
I know.
You're growing up that way your whole life and then thinking and it's so true. And so for people who are listening, we're in our subconscious learning stage only from the ages of 0 to 7. So anything that you see, your subconscious just takes on as true. There's no logic. There's your, 7-year-old self doesn't say, oh, well, maybe she's going to eat later, or doesn't think to say mom, how come you're not eating? Right? It would have been, as an adult, that would be such a simple solution to not develop this belief. Oh, how come you're not eating? But kids don't even think to ask those questions because there's no logic filter to ask that. It just goes, oh, okay, you're not eating. It must be because we don't have money for you to eat. Right? It's so crazy.
Meaning machines, right? We just make meaning to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it blows my mind, just the beliefs that we take on about the world. And like you said, none of them really are ours. Those beliefs that we take on between those ages, some of them are true beliefs that we see, but they still limit us. But most of them are an altered version of the truth. It's our truth, our model of reality. And so we find it true. But if you were to ask it to the general population, is that true for the world? The answer is almost always no. Mm-hmm. Oh, money is so hard to make. Oh, really? Is it really true that there's nobody in the world easily making money, or that money easily comes to them, or that you even have to work for money, right?
Or governments are there printing it every day.
Yeah, money's not even real. Canada is billions and billions of dollars in debt right now, but we keep printing more money and we keep living. Why is debt even a thing?
It's not an infinite supply.
Right. It's just,
we run out, we print some more.
Right. We tell people we're in debt, but really? Because debt's not even real.
And as you say, but the governments are in how much debt, but a single individual in debt is shameful.
Right.
Or is shamed for being in debt.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, and that's what I always find the fascinating as well. When you look at the investment side, I think you've got good debt and bad debt, right? Because I've probably got, well, I have got more debt than I've ever had in my entire world.
Right.
Life ever. But I've also got more assets than I've ever had in my entire life ever. And that is what is paying for me to live, right? You know, that asset base.
Absolutely.
And, you know, again, that's not taught to the general population because they want to keep us trapped in the 9-to-5.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which for me is more like the...
Yeah, crazy. That's, oh my gosh, can't even imagine. Yeah, and then I don't know if you follow that person on Instagram who goes around like asking really rich people how they made their money and like what their advice is. I forget, I couldn't even tell you what his like Instagram name is, or he's like on TikTok. But anyways, he finds like rich people and goes like, oh, how did you make your money? Like, what's your advice? And like, I would say half, I mean, everybody says mindset, first of all, but then half the people are like, don't be afraid to go into debt. Like, debt's not bad. Like, there is, yes, credit card debt. Yeah, not so good, but there's good debt that you can invest in or do things with, and it puts you on the other side of things, right? Or like, maybe it is a credit card, but maybe you really need to purchase something that's going to actually propel you forward. So you know that when you put it on your credit card, it's going to come back to you, right?
So, and you're returned on the end of it, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So,
for sure. But it's interesting also, Connor, one of the things you said earlier was about like the people empowered make these decisions and stuff like that. For me, I'm just going to bring up, I find it very interesting as well, the word powerful is sometimes, I feel like, is a word that's misunderstood. Because I see powerful as a feminine and a masculine word, kind of a both.
Yeah, has but different energies.
Feel like sometimes we use powerful instead of possibly force or control. Which are the more tyrant masculine energies that maybe have more of a not so positive
finally
right? But powerful, I think, you know, personal power, you know, us to be powerful, I think is a good thing. But again, we miss this thing of like, I, you know, power is bad,
right? Yeah,
because we've what we've experienced, you know, in the beyond our lifetime has been a misuse of power.
And there always will be, but it's just like money. Like, money isn't good or bad. It's neutral. And people are good or bad. But the things that they, you know, words like you powerful, if you are powerful, if I was powerful, I would do good things with it. If that person was powerful, they might do bad things with it, right? Like, sort of different ways.
You have the same thing, like people often don't want to make money because they don't want to be evil, right? Yeah. It's that same thing. And like, you know, it's always reinforcing to people, money doesn't make you anything. It potentially makes you more of who you already were. So if you were already not a particularly nice person with $1 in your bank account, you're going to be possibly not as nice with hundreds of millions of dollars in your bank account. But you were somebody that would give the shirt off your back with nothing, then you will be the greatest philanthropist this world's ever seen if you had money.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's something I've also seen, is a lot of people are like, but I don't need the money. Like, we still are living in a human world here at the moment. And, you know, so we still do navigate the world of money. And so, you know, there are things that need cash, right? We still need that frequency of money. But, you know, for me, when I've heard someone saying, but I don't need to earn any more than 30K a year, I'm like, that's great. But if you have an ability to make the 30K for yourself, great. But if you have an ability to then go make another 30K, look what you could do with it.
Yeah.
So why would you not actually, you know, use the resource of what you've got a skill set to do to help change the world?
Yeah.
Because we need more people like that to actually go do that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you wanted to throw 30 grand, I can't even talk, $30,000 into like Facebook ads so that you could reach more people. Like, okay, you don't need it. Great. But now you can reach more people into your program. Like, the more money you make, the more you can spend on getting more people into whatever it is that you teach, which will help them. And then they can go and help others. And it's like the ripple effect. So having more money. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I could never live off 30 grand a year.
But you know that, but you know, some people are like that, they, you know, I've often see often in the spiritual world, the healing world, right? There's this disassociation from money because it's not, you know, you can't be a good person. So you know, what I definitely stand for is bringing the worlds together. Like, and is a word I use a lot in my world. Okay. But like, you know, for me, you know, I'm a very spiritual person too, but it's bringing, you know, I don't want to disassociate your money to be spiritual in the same way you don't want to shun spiritual to be money, right? It's the and, it's combining the spiritual and the material world together.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is the way forward for us all. So, you know, when I see people that are very gifted in that spiritual healing community, like not making enough money or being, again, shamed for charging.
Yeah.
Like, they have an incredible gift that this world is needing right now and so should be charging what, you know, right, they want to charge.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
It's, you know, it's fascinating when that, like, a lot of that, it does, you know, it really does come up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, I'm, as I say, because I've got my portfolio, I then help other people with their money work and also invest so they can create that, you know, in, you know, legacy and lifestyle for themselves and their future generations. But my next level is also to look then to potentially do micro loans or something to like start up female businesses or something like that. So again, it can really can be a pay it forward.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so important. This is such an important conversation to have. Just the conversation we're having right now, without even like getting into like a teaching element, it's just like people need to know that money is only an energy, right? It's like we just talked about, it's not real. I mean, it's real, like it's physical, but like we just talked about, it's made up. And so the energy that you put behind it is what it will become. And so when you say, I want more money because I want to help people, I want more money because I want to go on vacation so I can take a break and then come back and do my best work, or I want to travel the world and show people that it's possible, like there's a good energy and intention behind that, instead of saying like, oh, I can't charge anything because like people will judge me. Like, those are limiting beliefs talking, not anything that's actually like tangible. So I think just sharing that message alone is worth thousands for people, right? Like, yeah, that is such an important thing for people to know before they can even talk about investing their money or
yeah,
the likes.
And then, you see, and then there's the people that have got it, and there's the shame around spending of it, right? You know, a lot of people are shamed for spending or different things. And kind of, for me, again, I look at the intentions. So, you know, for me, it's like, if it's kind of, you're just spending for the sake of spending, then like, what's the cause, right? Whereas if it's intentional spending, you're spending with your values, it's something that's, you know, you're doing something greater with it. But, mm-hmm, you know, there's often this stigma to spending. Like, money does need to flow. That, you know, yeah, that's the other thing about money. It has to flow in and out. It's not a hoard, you know, when you hoard it,
yeah,
that's also not a great thing. So I learned how to invest, which is the fundamental, which I think some people kind of forget, because they're like, oh, anybody can buy a house. They can, but not necessarily the right house or the right investment, right? So for me, it was like, that was important, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a lot of money to buy a property. Like, depending what, I mean, I tell people how much I have bought my investments, or they're like blown away by what I've actually done. I'm not buying multi-million pound properties and calling them investment properties, but you know, at the end of the day, it's more than my bottle of wine, a bottle of water, not wine. Wish it was 1 o'clock. It's getting near 1 o'clock where I am. But yeah, so I needed to make sure I knew what I was doing. So that was important. That was the first thing for me, was getting the education. So I got that, and I got into a sort of a network. So again, I had people supporting me in that regard as well. I wasn't doing it as like a, you know, solo person out there in the world, fighting the world. And then, yeah, from that, I obviously then applied the knowledge. But I needed to still have the money. So I found the property. And then with knowing obviously the plan of what I could therefore do with it, I then approached some people and said, hey, do you want to fund it? So that's how I started, was I found people that had maybe money in the bank, or, you know, in some sort of place where it wasn't really getting much of a return for them. And they were willing to give me for a better return. And again, I built trust with them. So they knew I wasn't going to go off to the sunset with all money. And then, yeah, my strategy was, I bought something a bit like what you were kind of saying for your own home. I bought something that was what we call distressed. So it wasn't in a good, you know, place. It was, the first one I bought was actually a deceased estate. So an older lady had passed away. So it hadn't had any money in like 30 years. So it but it was mainly cosmetic, you know, mm. needed new kitchen, new bathroom, you know, the whole, as you say, the like moving the flowery wallpaper and the curly, swirly carpets. And, you know, so I bought it cash with the person's money. And then they also funded the renovation. I got it completely refurbed, went back to brick, you know, did the whole thing, and then was able to rent it out. And then from then, because obviously I'd bought it here and kind of added value, I then was able to refinance it or remortgage it at this level. So then I was able to get kind of most of my money back to then go to the next one. That's what I carried on doing.
Yeah, amazing. That's what I've, so one of those people in the Instagram videos, they had said he bought his first house when he was like 20, and then he rented out all the rooms to his friends, like his college friends. Yeah. And they paid his mortgage. Like, I'm like, that's genius. Like, I wish that I had thought of that when I was 20. Is like, get other people to pay your mortgage. Because then he was living in the house.
That one missed like 16 years of my life.
I know, right? You're like, oh, the money and the properties that you could have. Because he said, like, you know, every time we would start to get like ahead on that mortgage and like getting it paid off, we would go and buy another one. So we'd move into a new house and we'd rent that one out. And we would do it all over again and over again and over again. And he would live with his friends that he was charging to, he was like living literally rent free because other people were paying rooms.
It's interesting again, like the house. Like to me, I've just been, you said earlier, like it was better for you to buy than to rent. Kind of, for me, it really depends on the location as well. Like, so for where I live in North London, it's actually cheaper to rent than it is to buy. But, you know, for others, you know, it is cheaper to rent, to buy to rent. But even when it is a location where it's potentially more lucrative to buy than rent, you still got to look at, like, what are you putting as a down payment? Like, all of those different costs versus if you took that same money and invested it, and then what that was going to provide off the back of that that then pays for your home. Like, so some of the younger people that I help, I kind of sometimes we look at that as a different, rather than buying their first home, which is everybody's, you know, aspiration. It's actually like, if we were to, you know, actually invest a little bit first, actually then when they buy their own home, it's being paid for by their investments. So they have already created some financial security. Because you see a lot of young people, right, buying these houses that then at a certain point, it becomes a challenge for them to keep on top of the payment.
Yeah, absolutely. For us here, we would have had to move out of the house we were in because our landlord was toxic. She was not mentally well. And there was a lot of stuff going on, and she had like moved a homeless person into the house, and it was just crazy. Like she was like dating him, but he was crazy. Like the cops were called a few times. Like we couldn't stay there. Like we have a 4-year-old daughter who was 3 at the time. So actually she was 2 at the time. And so we knew we had to move, but we were paying $1,800 in rent, knowing that if we ever had to move out of there, we'd be paying another $600 to $800 based on just the market. And so when we left, they raised it up to, I think, $2,200, and our mortgage is $2,400. So for an extra $200, we have a full house,
you're crazy
with
lady,
a big backyard, like actual space for our dog, no crazy lady. You know, a space for a garden, like our garden's already built. I had a space for my floral business, which we just didn't have in our 2-bedroom rental. Or so for that extra $200 a month, we have a way better.
And that's what's really interesting about that as well. It's because for me, like buying your own home is different to buying an investment. I personally don't buy my home as an investment. Mm-hmm. That's my home. Right. I know you can run structures on your own home. I'm not saying you can't, blah, 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 but for me, it's like I have my investments that support my home. But my home, you know, where I live in North London, it's not maybe the most sensible financial decision, right? It's a very expensive property. Right? You take that money and live in a lot smaller property somewhere else in the country or world and put all that money into an investment. But I choose to live here.
Right, because that's a value to you, is to have a nice, comfortable home that you feel good in.
Like, so, you know, for me, you should. Straight as I not in my laptop. But again, those are really interesting conversations I have as well. I had somebody call with somebody recently because, again, like this is, again, how I've evolved. You know, again, I wasn't born this way, right? And it's how, you know, how your own journey is. Like, I remember years ago, seeing people go and buy takeaway coffee every year, every day. And they judge you like, what? Like, that's a lot of money on like coffee. Yeah, and kind of like where I live, when I lived in Holland, we actually had this first Starbucks in Holland in our offices. So people were like breaking in to get into Starbucks back in the day. And I was like, this is insane. Yeah. This is crazy. But for me now, like I have a dog, we go out for a walk, I buy a coffee. But for me, it's not even about really the coffee. It's about my connection with my community and like every coffee shop we go into, we know the people, right? So it's a community, it's a connection value. It's not necessarily the coffee. Mm-hmm. So again, it's like you were saying, like if they're going on holiday makes you come back and refreshed and do your best work, then that's not a luxury.
Yeah, it does really come down to your values. And that's one thing I teach, and whether you call it manifestation or like achieving your goals, like however that resonates with you, is like you still have to have your clarity. You want to know exactly where you are and where you're going. You want to know what your values are, because if you don't know what your values are, how can you have clarity and have awareness of where you are? Because otherwise you would just be like feeling so unclear. If you had no idea what you valued, how could you do anything that felt aligned? You wouldn't know.
But it's the same thing I'm sure you've come across as well, like the arbitrary, like, I want to be a millionaire. I'm like, why? Like, and do you really need to be a millionaire to have all the things you're actually trying to have or achieve? Like, is that, you know, could you be just as happy on
X? And maybe they need that $1 million because it's part of this like big plan and big gigantic business they want to create, and then it's aligned. But if it's just because you're throwing out a number that seems great,
everybody else is the number to achieve, and actually maybe a million won't be enough.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in this day and age.
You know, but that's the interesting thing, right? It's when nobody, like I always say, money needs a purpose. And like, sometimes I don't think anyone's really broken it down to go like, what do you actually want, desire? Like, what do you want to create? Like, and then work out what is actually the number. Because, you know, I spoke to somebody recently, they were like kind of obsessing with 20,000 a month profit. And then they were like, oh, this is going to be so much hard work. And they've had all the stories behind it. And then they weren't taking any action.
Right.
And I was like, but why the 20K? And somebody had at some point said, well, to be successful, you need a 20K profit. Yeah.
And it's, well, how do you want to spend your year and your months? Like, I have, that's one thing I've been doing recently is really trying to get into the knowledge of money, because that's not something my parents didn't ever invest. You know, investment was for rich people, even though it's like so funny because, right, the people who do, like, rich people are rich because they invest, not the other way around, right?
Because they know. Yeah, you talk about the mindset.
And so, yeah, for me, I was like, well, I don't know anything about that. I had an ex-boyfriend, like, we lived together. We actually bought a house together. It's like back in the day. And he was very into investing. Like, he knew about it. And I was just like, oh, that's above my head. Like, I never thought about it. I was just like, hey, whatever, do your thing. And it's not until like literally just recently where I was like, I need to start learning about this, because even if you just invest a tiny bit per year, like if you have a small amount, like you can still make money. And so that's something I've been like just reading books about for now. But it's also hard to find books about Canadian finances, like what you could invest in, because everything is made for like Americans, all the books. But
Yeah, a lot of principles are similar. Obviously, that's the same thing when I say about property. Like, you know, when I helped the other company, it was an international company. Yeah. And actually, out of the UK, we managed the entire world, including Canada. The only place we didn't actually support was the US, because they had their own team. But because the UK team was so successful, because, as I say, the people that were doing it then became like the coaches and stuff like that, whereas the US had salespeople. Like, they were, whereas we were really like walking the talk and doing it, if that makes sense. Canadian team we support as well, but you know, I would say the Canada, America and the UK are very similar in terms of how the investing in money in, you know, property works, real estate investing, whatever we call it. It's very similar. It works. There's a lot of other countries that it's more tricky, but in terms of profit, it works in those three locations. There's Absolutely. Obviously going to be local intricacies that are a little bit yeah. different, but the principle, yeah, that's what I would say about that is kind of, yeah, look at that. But again, as you say, we're not taught this at school. And that's how I think about it with looking from a female perspective as well. Like a lot of people have this as well. Mm. If it's a man's world, it's not for me. That was definitely that feeling. And I hear that a lot of like, but investing's for men. Like that's money, investing, all of that is a man's world. Where if you, again, prescribe to the, if there's obviously that, you know, there's money in terms of like necessity, of like stability, that tends to be more the masculine energy of money. And then anything like overflow, this excess, mm-hmm. tends to be more the feminine energy of money. So actually investing is technically more feminine energy. Yeah.
It's the overflow. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you actually do look at studies that have taken place, you know, they say that females make better investors. So yeah. It is there for us. But again, it's changing that societal, you know, conversation we've had for years that like these are things that we don't do. Like, you know, I always have the same thing, like I don't know if you grew up with this, like putting money in your mouth, like money was dirty. Like we're pure, right? We're women, we're pure, you know, pure white, virginal. So we wouldn't want to get involved in anything that's dirty. Yeah.
Oh, God forbid. I mean, the constraints that have been put on women in general. We're not worthy of having money. What, never mind it being dirty. It's like you can't have money. You don't deserve to speak or have an opinion or have money to do your own thing. Like, I think it was, what, the 1970s where they allowed women to have credit cards? Like, that's insane.
I think in the UK, we were allowed our own bank account in 1975. I was born in 76, so it was a year before I was born. We were finally allowed our own bank account. But until 1982, we couldn't go into a bar and buy a drink ourselves.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
82.
Yeah. That's like insane.
That was my mind. How is that actually possible?
Honestly. And then and we as women wonder why we have all of these beliefs. And it's like goes back thousands of years of being told to sit quietly, don't talk, don't be seen unless we want you to be seen. And when we do, we're gonna show you off and tell you how to look and how to dress and what weight you should be. Like it's just there you go.
Sorry, how fun was the attack?
Yeah,
but again, going back to like, you know, being English, right? You know, the old days of like the dowries, like you were sold based on how much money your family gave your husband's family, right? It was very much, it wasn't potentially a partnership of love, right? It was a partnership of wealth sharing across families. Which for me is fascinating as well, because that also brings up a lot of conversations with women and money around, like, I can't have love and be, you know, and be successful. It's one or the other. It's that either or. Or, you know, one I've heard recently is like, I can't out-earn my husband.
Hmm. Yeah. Which is such backwards thinking. I'm like, I want to retire my husband. Like, I want him to not have to work or do, like, work, but choose to work however he wants, not to have to do it to support us. And I'm like completely the opposite. Like I want to make the most money.
But it's interesting, right? Because as you say, it comes through those things of like, you know, even potentially going back to the witch hunts and being persecuted and all those different things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Our witch wins. There's
history that we have.
Honestly, and like in the work that I do, with us, the subconscious mind, like it takes you back to a root cause. And so many of those go back to past lives. Like a lot of people, if they've had a lot of trauma, it'll take them back to like their 0 to 7 ages. But I grew up in a great family. They, you know, treated me with nothing but love. And so for me, a lot of my limiting beliefs have taken me back to past lives, which was something that I never really didn't believe in it. It was like neutral to me. And then after doing this work, I'm like, no, I definitely believe in past lives, because so many of my root causes have taken me to these other, like completely other lives and time periods where it's just like, it really opened my eyes up to like the patriarchy and the crown and so much of like all the beliefs that have been put on us. And it all comes down to like power in that bad kind of, you know, I'm going to control things way.
Yeah, for me, it's fascinating, kind of like, I have also just qualified as a root healer, so a root practitioner healer. So again, I take the same thing. It's all go, we're looking for the root, right? You know, so it might go in a child and then it might go past life, ancestral. It, I had one the other day that went back to Atlantis.
Yeah,
crazy. And I actually have experienced similar things like for a long time. Sometimes I'd be like, oh, there's something not quite right here, but like I can't find the thing. Like people will come and say, oh yeah, I know that this is wrong and I need to work on this. Like I don't know what the thing is, but I feel like there's something's not quite aligned. And yeah, I found the same thing with my own personal healing journey, that it's often past life or ancestral, so I have no awareness.
Yeah, exactly. How could you? How would you have any awareness of that? Because you have no conscious anything to even give you an idea of where it could have come from. And I find like now that I have these like past life experiences, I can even now I have like this conscious awareness where I could be like, oh, that could have come from that experience. And sometimes like I'll still do the process and sometimes it takes me back to that experience and sometimes it takes me somewhere else. And it's always like mind blowing. And you know, I was just having a conversation. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day because she's doing some sort of healing, which we were just like talking about it. She's just like an Instagram person that I talk to. And I was telling her about the work that I do. And she was like, yeah, I know most of my my limiting beliefs are like conscious things because I didn't grow up in a great household and that sort of thing. And I said, totally, you know, like some of my clients believe that too. And the interesting thing is that they think they know the events that cause that belief, but it's a reinforcement of the belief that actually comes from the root. So almost every time they were surprised. And I've had a couple of clients who go back to the womb. So that's like one in what we do is they've gone back to the womb. And the thing about that is that you can prove that by asking your mom, hey, did something happen when you were like 3 months pregnant, like some traumatic event that would cause like this emotion? And they've always said yes. Like I have clients who have asked their mothers and they're like, yeah, like this happened, how could you know that? And that just is like, yeah, you can't prove past lives, nobody can prove that to you, but the womb thing, like that's like a direct somebody else told you like they had that experience and passed it on to you. Like, it's so crazy.
Yeah. Mind-blowing.
And that one really does blow my mind.
It seems like that confirmation, thing again, that everything is working. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, and none of this is real. Like, that's what people, and, I, you know, I try to really, like, wrap my head around that. Like, knowing what I teach and knowing what I want to accomplish and, like, having these big dreams and fighting the beliefs that like, oh, but that's not going to happen because of X, Y, Z. And it's like, but none of this is real. Like I keep telling myself, like I can make anything happen because none of this is real. Like it's all just a belief that stemmed from something somebody told me or something I witnessed that was like somebody else's experience or belief or whatever. And people are doing it all the time. Like literally anything can happen.
But that's like, I don't know if you've heard this before, kind of, we always said in the UK that like if a policeman stopped for me and like asked for witness statements, like three different people would give three totally different witness statements, right? Because again, it would be based through their own filters of their own experience.
Exactly.
So like that again is another very solid, for somebody that needs more solid evidence, right? That's a clear one where actually like we're all interpreting things.
Right, because we all have our own model of reality, like based on our experiences and our beliefs.
What's real and
we can start healing those beliefs and then see that, that's not actually true. We can change our model of reality. And when we do that, then anything can happen. Like we can step into an entirely new identity when we look at our model of reality, because all of a sudden we see the world completely differently. Like, so different.
Three filters of like lesion and distortion, right? Like, you know, I had a few experiences on Monday where I was scrolling my Facebook feed, there was something on third eye, and then I'd walk down a road that I've walked hundreds, I'm making hundreds of times, and suddenly I saw this like alarm box on the side of the thing that said third eye, and I was like, I've walked past that hundreds and never seen it in my life before, and I was like, okay, where's the third one? It's like, you know, it's like I kept seeing third eyes everywhere, and I was like, but this is a road I've walked down hundreds before and I've never ever seen this book.
Blows my mind. These like this to talk to somebody who like gets it is, because most people are like, oh, that's cool, that's really neat, and you're like, yeah, it's actually incredible, but like to share the experience of being like, you guys, you need to just like wake up and see the potential that's there for you. Oh my gosh. Okay. So if you were to give somebody advice today to like how to start building their wealth, like what advice would you give them?
Start today. Because you can't start yesterday. So the only opportunity you've got is today. But when you, again, you see so many people that go like, you know, I have, you know, the classic one I hear is like, I need to get my ducks in a row. Or, you know, when I've done this, I'll do this. Like when I built my business, yeah. I'll do this. When I get to my career to this level, I'll do this. Like I lived that life too. I understand like that's, again, that's a human behavior, right? Of when I'll, and then I'll do that.
Right.
But you never get there.
Right.
So you just got to start. As you say, if it's a little and often, it's like, you know, the you've got, you know, what do they say? It's this like, I can't remember what they say now, the seventh, like wonder of the world or something is compound interest, right? Or something like,
yeah.
more wise than me, I'm sure I said that once, but you know, that is true. That's the one thing you've got at the moment. And with obviously the changes in finances across the global at the moment, we interest rates have increased a little bit, right? So at least doing something now, a lot of people in the past would be like, why bother saving? It's like 0.0000 interest.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, the more you can start now, you are going to get the years are going to what is going to, you know, work for you. You know, when I look what I've done in the last decade and I've driven a seven-figure net worth, that's come also through the growth of the properties, right? It's not come through everything I've physically done.
Right.
And that, you know, if I hadn't had the courage to start that 12, you know, or now nearly 12 years ago, like I wouldn't have created that in the last year. And that blows my mind, like to think that I have created that in a decade. So, you know, that's my thing is like, start with something, don't put off. And let's say, do you?
Yeah. So what would be like the one thing that is easy enough to start today? Like, is it just a basic savings account? Is it an actual investment account? And if so, like what sort of investment account? Like, obviously not everybody can go out and buy a piece of property like right off the bat, but like, how would you, like, what would be the very first step in starting that you would recommend?
So I don't have the investment, like, so I have investment account, but I don't have like, I'm not,
yeah.
I can't teach you about trading stock markets or that. It's all investment.
For sure.
Don't do any of that. So I'm very authentic of like, I teach what I know and not what I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So like, well, I've got those. It's not something I know about. But yeah, kind of for now, I would look at something that's a high interest account, potentially, yeah. Depending if you want still to have access to it. Like then you can put like a, you know, something you can obviously have instant access, you know, 30 day, you know, here we got 30 day, 60 day, 90 day accounts, 120 day accounts. So again, you could decide how much you maybe want in a somewhere where you could access it if you really needed to, and then put stuff in more of like a vault account where you can't access it. Because that's the thing sometimes, yeah. As well. People will put it away and then they're like, oh, it's just there. Let me pull it back again. Right. And I think that's, yeah. The discipline piece of it. Like, again, if you've got a bigger plan of what you're trying to achieve, then you don't kind of try and steal from your dreams, right? That's how I kind of see it. It's like, do you really want to steal from your dreams? That's your dream.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost like looking like for the long-term thing, like a government bond account where it's safe, like it's a fairly safe investment, but it's locked up for like 20 years. And
yeah, it depends what you're, again, it comes down to like, even with property, it's like, I always teach people like, what's your investment strategy? Like, what is it we're trying to achieve? And then you match, yeah. To it. So like giving a very generic answer is a little, yeah. Bit tricky. It depends what your, you know, what your position is right now and what you're trying to achieve. But I would definitely start putting some money aside, right? You know, that, you know, there's obviously the philosophy of pay yourself first, yeah. Right? That's the first thing to go out, is to put something for yourself.
And then
aside.
Would you say it's more important, like if say the people are listening to this right now and they're like, yeah, that's great, but I have like $50,000 in credit card debt. Like what is it more important to pay those credit cards off or to save, or is it like simultaneous, like $50 on your credit card, $50 on your...
I think it's simultaneous, because again, I hear all the big people saying, you know, debt's bad, pay off your debts first, blah, 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 right? Whereas for me, it's like, you know, I had this philosophy with my person before. Say they had let's use the 50,000 because we need 20, but let's keep the 50. Say you did come into 50,000, most people then would clear the debt. Right, but what if you again were to do something slightly different and use that 50k to go and make another 50k and then clear the debt? You then still have 50k, right? Whereas if you just clear the debt, you're back to ground zero and you've got nothing again. So, you know, that's where I see, I don't personally also believe in budgets, because I see a lot of people living in this, it's the same for diets, right? You can look at it with behaviors across so many different arenas, right? But people are living in restriction, or constriction, whichever way you want to look at it. And then they can't sustain that.
Uh-huh.
Then what happens is they, you know, explode and spend more than what.
Then you feel guilty and shameful. And
spiral all over again, right? So for me, yeah. It's like looking at where your credit card debt is would be the first thing I'd do. So like, where are the high interest ones? Could you move them on to 0%? Can you go to the banks and negotiate any lower interest rates? You know, a lot of these people are people that go, no. But if you don't ask, you don't know. Honest to God, you don't know unless you ask.
I read a book and somebody said that was like one of the pieces of advice is to call the bank and negotiate. And if they say no, you're like, okay, well, I'm going to move my debt over to this bank then.
Yeah.
And right. A lot of times they'll be like, oh, actually.
Let me do something. Yeah. So I'd be like, and again, if it's a husband or wife, it's a partnership, right? If I assume it's the same as the UK, you can move from one person to the other. Like, obviously that's got to be a mutually agreed thing. You can't just put debt onto somebody and then leave them. That's not a good idea. I'm not advocating that. I have actually seen that happen. I'm not advocating that.
That's crazy.
But you know, but you can work then together. If one of you's maybe got better credit than another, like there's ways of working together on that. Because again, if you're doing joint finances, if you can get it, like, you know, I had somebody recently who paying £200 a month on the interest payment or interest plus debt. And I was like, well, if you could move that onto a 0%, then you could be paying the 200 and it'd be coming off the whole of the capital, right? So 0%, negotiating if you can reduce the rates. And then people have different philosophies of what's the right way to like snowball debt. You could start with the one that's the highest interest rate. And like, you just want to clear that one first because that's the one that's hurting the most. Some people say, take the one that's got the lowest balance. Because you want
to pay it off, feel good.
Or first, because that's that's almost like that win of like, hey, I had a win on the one. Unless they make you close the account, I always don't actually advise to close accounts unless you can't, if you're somebody that really doesn't feel that you can manage them. Like, because for me, again, credit cards are not evil. Like, I use credit cards all the time. Everything goes on my credit cards. They are either, you know, direct payments out of the bank or it's a credit card payment. And I have different cards for different things. So I'm very clear. This card pays for this. This card pays for this. This card pays for this. And for me, they're great in terms of trackability. Because the funniest that I get is like, oh, I've taken 200 out of the bank. And I'm like, well, what was it?
Yeah.
They're like, no. And I'm like, yeah, it's a really great way to lose 200 then. So it's like Amazon, the bulk call of like, it's an Amazon order for 200. Like, but what actually was that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, I like the ability to keep the track a bit, you know, the tracking of it through the credit card. And then also, you know, using credit cards well, like using them, paying them off every month, actually then builds up that credit file, which then helps you get lending, which ultimately is what you need in this world. And if you want to invest and you're going to need investing, you know, lending for investing.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what I love about property. You know, for me in the UK, they'll lend me 75% of the value of the property to go purchase it, right? Whereas if I go to the bank and say, hey, I want to buy some shares, I've got to find the whole lot.
Right. Yeah.
So it's that leverage piece. So, you know, your credit cards will help you build credit file, all those things. But if you don't feel like you're going to have that discipline of using them, paying them off, then maybe you do want to close some. But I'm not an advocate of like, you know, cut them all up and put them in the bin. Like, it's just
totally.
Again, your own, you know, their self discernment of what you're using.
Yeah. And that's also the points that you get with certain cards and being able to work that system. Like, I actually just discovered, so in Canada we have Scene points, so it's like our Cineplex. I don't know, there's just this point system, but you can use it for money or gift cards or whatever. And so my debit card has Scene points, so does my American Express. And I realized, I was like, wow, I have like a lot of points, like how did I get all these? And I was like, oh, because I'm getting four times when I put it on my credit card. So when I was paying for something on my debit card, I'd get like 34 points and be like 1 point per dollar spent. But then it was like 200 points when I would put it on my credit card. And I'm like, I rack them up so fast that way.
Again, it's about that mindset piece. Yeah. It is saying is like a poor mindset uses a debit card, a rich mindset will use a credit card. But again, they've got their disciplined with
that. Right. Knowing that, okay, if I have the money in my debit account, then I will then transfer it over to my credit card instead of making the purchase with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like I say, I literally, nothing goes on my debit card. It doesn't come out of my wallet. Right. I know I did a test. I did a test in 2000, and this is going back a while now, 2018. I took £20 out of my bank account on January the 1st. And like, thank God we followed the Canadians and we have plastic money, because if not, it would have rotted. You know, so I had like the £20 in my wallet the entire year. And then I went to the coast on Christmas Day with my parents to like go and have a windy walk along the beach. And as we were leaving, the pub had just opened, and we were like, oh, let's just go in and get like a mulled wine, like Christmas drink. And I couldn't see I couldn't see a machine anywhere. So I was like, oh, I'll use the £20 out of my wallet. So it was in there all year from the January the 1st to December the 25th.
Yeah. And I brought so crazy things,
right? Because I was like, can I actually do life without money? Like, you know, okay, say, I know there's a whole story at the moment about going cashless. I think we're going to head there, whatever we do. And, you know, that does worry me a little bit that there's going to be an element of like the control and see all of these things. But, you know, we are, as I say, we are still navigating that kind of matrix, and that's where we are. But that's why I feel like this opportunity to understand money, understand about investing is like, this is the time now that we all need to own that, because there's going to be some interesting things afoot. And if you're still really in that system, you've got to build independent wealth and independent income. Like, you know, for me, that's the other thing that I sort of teach a lot around, is a lot of people will kind of, again, not live now for later. Like, it's like, oh, it's all about, and I'm like, or they live crazily now and don't give a shit about later. For me, again, it's that, and it's like creating, you know, the income of the portfolio now, but it's also the long-term wealth for later.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's a balance, right? Everything in life is that balance. And I've been actually posted a reel today about health, that it was like that balance of like, I choose coffee over matcha because matcha tastes like grass. Like, I still have a glass of wine, even though I'll choose mocktails like half the week, and then sometimes it's a glass of wine. And it's a balance of like, how do you feel? Like, sometimes I want a big bowl of pasta, and other times I want a green salad. It doesn't have to always be green salad when you want a pasta, right? Like, it's really being in tune with how you're feeling today, because you could spend your whole life eating so healthy, which is also just another form of disordered eating, but you could spend your life being so healthy and only do holistic things and then get hit by a car tomorrow. And then what? Yeah. None of that helped you survive the car crash.
But there's a lot of this like delayed gratification sort of craziness, right? And it's, for me, it's no, that's not. Yeah. No, yeah. It's both. It's like, you know, we always say it's living your legacy now and leaving your legacy later. Right.
Yeah, make plans.
Because your children will remember how you brought them up, and the things that, again, we've just talked about over the 7 years, especially, right? Those things they remember, that's the legacy that you leave, not necessarily always the cash you leave.
Absolutely.
Right? Who you were as a person.
Yeah. And not even just money-wise, like, you can look at that health-wise too. If you're always being restrictive and eating in a certain way, you know, there's another person that I follow on Instagram. I follow a lot of people, apparently, but with good things that I learned from. And she was saying that she grew up in a household that was very restrictive. And every time she would go to a friend's house, she would just like binge eat all the things, that, like all the junk food and stuff that she wasn't allowed to have at home. And then as an adult, when she was free of her family, she just like binged everything. Then she found like that holistic lifestyle again and went so hardcore and so strict. And then she was like, kind of woke up one day and she's like, wait, what am I doing? Like, I tried to avoid
yo-yoing between the two, right? The two extremes.
There's balance, and it's okay to like have a bowl of ice cream because you feel like having a bowl of ice cream and it brings you joy. Doesn't mean you have to eat it every single night to the point where you're like feeling sick.
For me, I've just tweaked the word balance to harmony now, though. That's the only thing I say about it, because like, I always struggle with the balance, like, even like work-life balance, all these different things. Like where's the balance? I would like, well, it needs to be equal, and I can't make it equal. So now we see it as more harmony. It's that flow again, too, right? Of, you know, whether we talk about the saving and spending, whether that's, as you say, the binge, you know, binging, or, you know, good or bad food, like however we want to label it. Or, you know, even your working and rest, right? It's that flow of both. We need both.
I'm a Libra, so it's like the scale of balance. And I've always been good at having that balance where I can see like, okay, balance to me isn't equal. It's like sometimes it's going to be here and sometimes it's going to be here, but it's always like balancing out in one way or another for me. But I like that too, like harmony of it all just fitting together.
That is actually, though, really funny, again, just looking at the irony of this. You understand visual Libra, and I'm talking about flow, and I'm a Pisces, and so I'm a fish. I'm talking about flow. So naturally, mine's flow.
Yeah, it's so funny, right? Like, and I think that's it, too, is, like, we all see, it comes back to, like, we all see that world differently, the world differently, based on our human design, based on our zodiac signs. Like, there really is, if we actually look at these things, like, there's truth to it, and if we can pay attention to the things that are about us and our strengths and our weaknesses, like, we just have so much awareness in how to live our lives, how to be in a partnership with our partners. Like, my husband's a Cancer, so he's very emotional. It's really hard for me, who's not like a super emotional person, but we've been able to work through that, you know, and really communicate. And that was like one of the things too, was like communication. Like, we need to, I can't read your mind. I'm not a mind reader. So you need to actually tell me when something is happening. But yeah, just like being aware of when you understand yourself, then you know how you see the world, and then you can use that to your advantage and disadvantage.
And that's where, for me, coming together of humanity rather than the possible rhetoric of separation that's being created at the moment, right? That is, for me, is that coming together, that understanding our differences and honoring those rather than all having to be the same.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, it's honoring who we are, what we are, what we bring to the world. And then, you know, where somebody's like, you've got the skill in something that somebody else hasn't got, they come to you and they help, you know, you can help them with that. And it's not, again, through guilt or shame that they haven't got that sorted. It's, you know, we're all made differently.
Absolutely. Yeah. And stepping into that power, like using that, that's your power. Who you are is your power. And when you can use it and be authentically yourself, like, that's everything.
Equal power, but different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Everybody has a different strength. And when you can really step into yourself, like, I think that's where our power comes from, when we can be our most authentic selves and put that out to the world. And it doesn't mean I'm more powerful than the next person. We all have that equal power when we are, like, showing up as our genuine, unique self, because we're all different and we all have our own power that we can step into. And then the world becomes whole again, you know? Yeah. Wait, I just solved all of our problems. Just be yourself and everything will fix itself.
It's that simple.
Yeah. Honestly, right? Oh my gosh. Well, I loved our conversation today. I can't wait to share this. I'm going to start editing it right away so I can post it hopefully today or tomorrow. And I'll send you a link because I'm really excited.
Perfect. Yeah, that'd be amazing. I'm sure it was awesome.
Yes. Before we go, let our audience know where they can find you, and I'll put it in the show notes as well.
But yeah, so it's probably easy on social media. So Facebook, I think it's just Rachel Jane Gregory. Instagram, I am Rachel Jane Gregory.
That's perfect. I will put those in the show notes, and then everybody should go connect with Rachel, because it's lovely. It was so great talking to you.
You
are so
awesome.
Welcome.
Thank you so
have
much
a wonderful
today.
Rest of your evening, I think it is there.
Yeah, it's good.
Yes, it's quite sunny here today, which is lovely. Yes. All right. I'll talk to you later.